Well, good morning. It's Sunday, February 5th, 2023. For part three of the series, God's Own Words, Glory in This, we are again going to open by reading the two outstanding verses in Jeremiah, starting with verse 23. Thus saith the Lord, let not the wise man glory in his wisdom, neither let the mighty man glory in his might. Let not the rich man glory in his riches, but let him that glorieth glory in this, that he understandeth and knoweth me, that I am the Lord, which exercise loving kindness, judgment, and righteousness in the earth. For in these things I delight, saith the Lord. And that understandeth means to look at, to give attention to. And, you know, we are covering the verses about knowing or acknowledging God. That last couple of weeks, we've really been focusing on that. We glorify Him in directing our focused attention to His will and by acknowledging Him in all our ways. God is not bah humbugging. You know, He's not undercutting the wonderfulness of skillfulness or sound common sense, nor does he disregard physical strength. And God is not against riches. We see that throughout the Word. His message is that there is no glory in the fleshly prowess in any category. Without God, no matter our self-discipline, our intelligence, a lot of it or lack of it, or our street savvy, our physical strength, our emotional strength, our wealth. You know, we are defenseless even if all that is intact to the hilt and we are just the cream of the crop in all these categories. We are defenseless against the cunningness of the enemy. In Exodus concerning the ark, starting at in chapter 25, God gives Moses instructions about the construction, the dressing of the interior, and even the garments the priest would wear. I mean, it starts in chapter 31 and it doesn't end all, I think chapter 35, 36, something like that. We'll be touching down in some of these chapters as we move along. So let's begin reading in verse 1 of Exodus 31. And the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, see, I have called by name Bezalel, the son of Uri, the son of Hur, of the tribe of Judah. God called this man by name, this Bezalel. The name Bezalel means in the shadow or in the protection of God. His father was Uri, and he was a prince of Judah and a son of Hur. And Hur, you know, acknowledging God was the family business. It went generation after generation. All these men followed God, and all of them had unique craft skills in building, interior, exterior, working with cloths, working with dyes, and they were all there. Verse 3, God says, and I have filled him, Bezalel, I have filled him with the Spirit of God in wisdom and in understanding and in knowledge and in all manner of workmanship, to devise cunning works, to work in gold and in silver and in brass and in cutting of stones to set them and in carving of timber, to work in all manner of workmanship. And I, behold, I have given with him Aholiab, the son of Ahishmash, of the tribe of Dan, and in the hearts of all that are wise-hearted, I, God, have put wisdom that they may make all that I have commanded to do." And the details, it's just fascinating to read Exodus 31, 32, 33, 34. Fabulous reading. And all these men, they were already builders, architects, planners. They were skilled in their areas, grandfathers, fathers, sons. And they were men from the tribes of Judah and Dan. But now, with all this wonderful skill, God puts His Spirit upon them. He gives them of His wisdom that they may make all that God commanded to be done. So suffice to say, these men were already cunning in their work. But God took it over the top to accomplish His purposes. Here's a summation starting in verse 7 of what they worked with the Spirit of God. The tabernacle of the congregation, and the ark of the testimony, and the mercy seat that is thereupon, and all the furniture that is in the tabernacle, and the table and his furniture, and the pure candlestick with all his furniture, and the altar of incense, and the altar of burnt offering with all his furniture, and the laver and his foot, and the claws of service, and the holy garments for Aaron the priest, and the garments of his sons to minister in the priest office, and the anointing oil, and the sweet incense for the holy place, according to all I have commanded thee, shall they do. And in conclusion, in Exodus 38:22, and Bezalel, the son of Uri, the son of Hur, of the tribe of Judah, made all that the Lord commanded Moses. He did everything. And then with him was Aholiab, son of Ahishmash, of the tribe of Dan. He was an engraver and a cunning workman and an embroiderer in blue and in purple and in scarlet and fine linen. In Isaiah 50:11 says that those who gird themselves with sparks, or they go out and they walk in the light of their own fire, God says they're going to lie down in pain and grief and terror, because one's own light is only going to take them so far. And then we need that light of God. We need the light of God all the time. But for those people who refuse it, they're going to lie down in pain, grief, and terror. I guess that's where the little saying come from, "You've made your bed, now lie in it." You know, when we turn away from God to refuse what is available so freely, then we have this bed of pain and grief and fear. Psalm 27 goes on to say, "Some trust in chariots and some in horses, but we will remember the name of Jehovah our God." In Proverbs 30, verses 8 and 9, it's a proverb actually that was recorded by Agur. He asked God, "I don't want to be rich and I don't want to be poor. Just give me the right amount for me." He didn't want to be so full of food or wealth that he forgot Jehovah, that he was lured into walking in the light of his own sparks. "Look what I've got. I don't really need God. I'm all set, thank you." You know, he did not want to be so poor and hungry that he would have to steal, on the other hand. You know, so you know, that was his prayer. Let me just be right there, and I will be content with the things that I have. Proverbs has God's life lessons that express spiritual wisdom. They're sentences that illuminate the wisdom that issues forth from looking to God and acknowledging Him. And in Proverbs 24, verse 13, we find a life lesson that is a real treasure trove. 24:13, "My son, eat thou honey, because it is good, and the honeycomb, which is sweet to thy taste." Honey is not only delicious to the taste, but the benefits of its goodness for the body are so numerous. I know in previous teachings, I've listed many of the healing properties of honey. And it is fun just to go online and look it up and see all the ways, the different websites that they bring up, different ones, and it's interesting to put it all together to see the benefits. So in verse 14, he's likening this honey that is sweet to the taste. He said, "So shall the knowledge," or the acknowledgement of wisdom, "be unto thy soul." It's like the sweetness of the honey. It's going to be beneficial in all these different ways. "So shall the knowledge," or the acknowledgement of wisdom, "be unto thy soul." "Be unto thy soul" means it's according to your desire. You know, some people desire a lot, some people not so much, but it'll be according to your desire. And the verse 14 goes on, "When thou hast found it, then there shall be a reward or hope, and thy expectations shall not be cut off." So shall, as that verse starts, just as the honey is so excellent for the body, so is the acknowledgement of God's wisdom to the soul. Drink it in, take it in, see how sweet and wonderful it is to the soul. And these benefits are eternal. They serve us well. So back when we worked the wisdom of God, we read these next few great verses in Proverbs chapter 2. And in the framework of the series that we're in right now, they really do speak so tenderly to our heart. Proverbs 2:1, "My son, if thou wilt receive my words and hide my commandments with thee, so that thou incline thine ear unto wisdom and apply thine heart to understanding." Now, inclining our ears means that we hearken. Not only do we listen or hear it, but we heed it. We attend to what we are hearing. And then applying our hearts describes us stretching our heart forth and out towards God. Just reaching our hearts out toward God. It means that we turn aside. We kind of bow down in our hearts. We're sort of bowed over in our hearts, because we want this. We want this. Verse 3, "Yea, if thou criest after knowledge and lift up thy voice for understanding." You know, when we call out to God for the purpose of knowledge, we don't just do it to gain a knowledge of statistics or a bunch of Greek and Hebrew words. You know, who needs that? Who needs that really? To walk a wonderful, victorious life where God is able to lead us away from evil. Yes, we want the meaning of some of these words. We are so appreciative to be able to go to the Greek and the Hebrew and look at figures of speech and look at grammatical usages. And they're just wonderful because they do help us to get a deeper value out of a verse. For sure. But we don't just do it to gain the knowledge. We do it because it helps us to arrive at the purpose of the knowledge. We call upon God for knowledge because of its result in our lives. Verse 4, if thou seek her as silver and search for her as for hid treasures. Interesting. Finding silver requires mining. For it, you know, you mine for silver. And finding hid treasures, it requires searching and digging and investigating. Gee, where's that hidden treasure? We mine the word as one who would seek something very worthwhile. And, you know, we dig for the hidden treasures that are valuable beyond our ability to even articulate. Verse 5, then, when you're mining for the wisdom of God, and we're mining for knowledge that we can actually do something with, it says, then shalt thou understand the fear of the Lord and find the knowledge of God. Then we will have the reward. We will have the reward of knowledge, which is ultimately spiritual understanding of God's holiness and righteousness. That's the product of the knowledge. That's the object of the knowledge, or the objective of the knowledge. That's the purpose for us knowing, is to get that spiritual understanding. Verse 6, for the Lord giveth wisdom. Out of his mouth cometh knowledge and understanding. Now, in verse 6, the Hebrew word for knowledge and understanding are different from the Hebrew words in Jeremiah 9:24. Here, it's the knowledge that comes from the mouth of Jehovah. It's perception and skill and discernment. Again, it is the product. It is the culmination of knowing. It's the result of knowing, is perception, skill, and discernment. And this is the knowledge that God holds. The understanding refers to the faculty of understanding, the spiritual intelligence and insight. And both the knowledge and the understanding are within the wisdom of God. Picking it up in verse 7, he layeth up sound wisdom for the righteous. He is a buckler to them that walk uprightly. He keepeth the paths of judgment and preserves the way of his saints. Then shalt thou understand righteousness and judgment and equity, yea, every good path. When wisdom entereth into thine heart, and knowledge is pleasant unto thy soul. Our knowledge of God isn't simply interesting or intriguing. It may be those, but that's not all. It's pleasant. It's sweet like that honey. And that means it means it's beautiful. It's sweet. It's pleasant means it's beautiful, sweet, delightful. It's lovely. It's just all those wonderful words that are very cushy. It is to be sweet like the honey, and it's good in all ways. Verse 11, discretion shall preserve thee, understanding shall keep thee, to deliver thee from the way of the evil man, from the man that speaketh forward things. And when we read from Proverbs, we might think of Solomon's beginnings. Maybe his endings weren't so good, but his beginnings were perfect. The section in 1 Kings chapter 3, starting in verse 3, and Solomon loved the Lord, walking in the statutes of David his father, only he sacrificed and burnt incense in high places. And the king went to Gibeon to sacrifice there, for that was the great high place. 1,000 burnt offerings did Solomon offer upon that altar. So, you know, Solomon was raised and taught to love God. And And he did. He walked in the ways of David, his father. But Solomon, by way of a marriage alliance, became the son-in-law to the Pharaoh king of Egypt. You know, his wife wasn't brought up in the ways of the Lord. She, on the other hand, sacrificed and burnt incense in the high places. So it kind of stands to reason that some of that would rub off on Solomon. And he allowed himself to worship the true God, but yet he worshiped him in the high places where others worshiped idols. Now, granted, back in that time, they didn't have another place to worship just yet. Solomon was a very great part of getting that set. But so while there in Gibeon, verse 5 says, in Gibeon, the Lord appeared to Solomon in a dream by night, and God said, ask what I shall give thee. You know, God so wonderfully looked up on his heart, didn't he? Even in his error, God led him along. And I think back of those verses where he says, love me, know me, understand me, and I will remove you from evil. So God is now seeking Solomon's go-ahead. You know, he can't run over Solomon's freedom of will. So he approaches Solomon. You know, what would you like from me? What can I do for you? Solomon could say anything he wanted. But in verse 6, Solomon said, thou hast showed unto thy servant David, my father, great mercy, according as he walked before thee in truth and in righteousness and in uprightness of heart with thee. And thou hast kept for him this great kindness, that thou hast given him a son to sit on his throne as it is this day. And now, O Lord my God, thou hast made thy servant king instead of David my father, and I am but a little child. I know not how to go out or come in. This is beautiful. Solomon was a grown man. There wasn't anything slight about this man. He wasn't dumb. He was savvy. But you know what? In his heart, compared to the wisdom of God, he was but a little child in his own mind. Now that is submitting to the mighty hand of God. Verse 8, and thy servant is in the midst of thy people, which thou hast chosen, a great people, that cannot be numbered nor counted for multitude. Give therefore thy servant an understanding heart to judge thy people, that I may discern between good and bad. For who is able to judge this thy so great a people? Verse 10, God liked this. He says, and the speech pleased the Lord, that Solomon had asked this thing. And God said unto him, because thou hast asked this thing, and hast not asked for thyself long life, neither hast thou asked riches for thyself, nor hast asked the life of thine enemies, but hast asked for thyself understanding to discern judgment. Behold, I have done according to the words. Lo, I have given thee a wise and an understanding heart, so that there was none like thee before thee, neither after thee shall any arise like unto thee. And I have also, given thee that which thou hast not asked, both riches and honor, so that there shall not be any among the kings like unto thee all thy days. And that's why in our prayers, back when we were working on prayer, they didn't pray for their business. They didn't pray all the time for their health. Sure, they went and prayed for the sick. But they didn't pray for, you know, a new car. They prayed for power to speak the word. They prayed for strength to stand in the evil day. God is pleased with that prayer, and he will do that, and he will give you what you don't pray for. He will bless your life immeasurably. And, you know, really, here's great further documentation that God has no problem with those who acknowledge him being wealthy. But we see the spiritual documentation here because Solomon was extremely wealthy when you go on and read. Verse 14, "And if thou wilt walk in my ways to keep my statutes and my commandments, as thy father David did walk, then I will lengthen thy days." And Solomon awoke, and behold, it was a dream. And he came to Jerusalem, and he stood before the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord, and he offered up burnt offerings, and offered peace offerings, and made a feast to all his servants. You know, there's a true heart cry unto God for the result of knowledge and understanding, that he would have God's wisdom to exercise among those in his kingdom. And we see God's deliverance, because when he received the vision, he went to Jerusalem and offered offerings before the Ark of the Covenant. There was no more high places in his life at that point. You know, we see this truth in Psalm 91, starting with verse 14. "Because he hath set his love upon me, therefore will I deliver him. I will set him on high, because he hath known," or here's our word, "acknowledged me. He shall call upon me, and I will answer him. I will be with him in trouble. I will deliver him," and look at these next words, "and honor him. I will deliver him." Now, last week in part two, we read, "Be not wise in thine own eyes, fear the Lord and depart from evil." And the words "depart from evil" in the context, it means to be removed from evil. God would be with Solomon in trouble, and he would deliver him. He would remove him. And the last phrase in Psalm 91:15 says that he would honor him. You know, whatever it takes in the way of prayer and study to fill our minds with the Word of God so that the Holy Spirit can work in us to bring our hearts to the place where we set our love upon the Father. Whatever we need to do to acknowledge him. Jehovah says two times in verse 14 and 15, "I will deliver." He's speaking of the one who sets his love upon him, who acknowledges him. God says he will be with this one when he is in trouble. And then he says he will honor him. Now, that word for honor in verse 15 is our word for glorify. That's right. All that glorifying we do for the Father, look at this, he gives it right back. That's God's own word. Those are God's own words. And as for what's next, we don't want to get too far removed from our focus on prayer, because that is just our everyday staple. So right now, Larry and I have been working on transcripts from some of his earlier teachings, and especially right now, a couple on prayer. They will really augment the way that we approached our work on prayer at the end of last year. So we can really look forward to one of those transcripts for next week in lieu of a recording. We'll be sending it out in pretty much the same format, but it will be a document that you will open rather than a link you will go to. So God bless you. Have a wonderful week.